Well, there's so few of us tonight that it'd be nice if everyone moved forward. I don't know if anybody's willing to come a little closer. So I was very piqued and enlivened by the woman who asked the question about her practice being a little bit more passive tonight. Was she still here? We lost her. And what she said, that she was lacking the same sense of urgency. And after she spoke, I began to think about, you know, in light of the person who came in and who was quite aggressive, and he's, in some ways, he's the tip of the iceberg of a systemic challenge that we all share, which is that there are countless people among us who are in different circumstances. And on one hand, it's a reminder that just to be able to be here and to sit and keep quiet and have as our focus for this time the awakening of our hearts, the quieting of our minds, the clarifying of our understanding, that this is the fact that we can do this. This is the height of privilege. And yet, we don't, I think I can speak generally, we don't always hold it with that sense of appreciation and urgency. And of course, recognizing our privilege to be able to have the safety, the resources, the interest, the clarity of mind to have discerned that there is a possibility of there being inner peace, awakening, as the Buddha called it, the sure heart's release. That itself is such a blessing, and yet how each of us came to that, the circumstances we're in, how each of us came to that does not exist apart from everyone else's experience, including those who for one reason or another are not able to contemplate the nature of reality, what our essential nature is. And just the contrast between, not just between, but the differences of the conditions in which people live in this world seems to be a central part of our awakening, is that we don't forget that not everybody can do this. You know, in fact, of course, here in this neighborhood, there are people who just do not have the wherewithal to do this. But there are places in the world where this would be considered blasphemous, or it would be completely unsafe to do this, and people couldn't gather like this. So the conditions that we have are really precious, and it's a privilege to be able to do this. But I think we should never forget that there are those who can't do this. And we have to keep in mind how we don't exist apart from them. So part of my own dedication, in a way, is awaken, but never consider my awakening apart from all other beings. And whatever the fruit is, whatever the blessings, whatever the goodness, whatever the benefits that arise from my own practice, I feel dedicated to giving that away, really offering it as a blessing to all beings, and carry with that reflection a deep wish that all beings can have the comfort and safety and privilege to be able to stop and keep quiet and look within. Now, it's easy to say that anyone could do this. Anybody, it isn't just for people of privilege. But a lot of times people are dealing with survival, dealing with the elements. There are lots of people right alongside the church who are homeless or without homes. And even in our group among us, there are people, you know, someone came in and told me tonight that for a few weeks anyway, they're without a home. And it's so easy to take for granted the comfort of our own conditions. I just think a daily reflection of our interbeing is a useful thing. At least it feels important, especially tonight for some reason. But now that we're here and we acknowledge our good fortune, anybody here not feel the good fortune of being able to be here? Being able to stop and kind of know a little greater sense of peace? We can ask that question. Now that we're here and we're settled in a little bit, and ask that question, what is our essential nature? You know, we go to school from the time we're kindergartners, go to elementary school, junior high, high school, college, degrees, this business, that, churches. It's so rare to hear the question. To me, the most amazing question, who am I? What is my essential nature? What am I? And it's the question that I think is embedded in the heart of every being. When there is enough safety and comfort and enough, at least enough food, etc. The natural urge comes to find out, to ask these what we might call spiritual questions. What's our essential nature? That's what happened to the Buddha. And that question, and then the faith that grew out of that question came out of some acknowledgement of distress, of unsatisfactoriness. And in the Buddha's case, he had everything and was still unsatisfied. And it stirred this kind of question, well, what's this life all about? Who am I? What am I supposed to be? Somebody said today, they came in and said, I don't know who I am. We all, that's a great question. Who am I? What am I? So where do we usually go to when we ask that, what is our essential nature? What's the first thing that we say? We consult our memory, and what usually comes out of our mouth? What's my essential nature? Well, I'm a human. And that's relatively true. And then the mind will usually compound that with we'll go to our gender or our orientation or our history. But what are we? What is our essential nature on present evidence? Anybody willing to pop up with a answer to that? Please.
I think it's about the goal is peace of mind, and the purpose, you get to peace of mind through forgiveness.
So peace of mind through forgiveness.
Well, peace of mind is the goal.
Is the goal. So is that your essential nature, is peace of mind?
Your essential nature is forgiveness. A big part of it is forgiveness.
Okay. So for an essential part of our nature is forgiveness. Say that again.
What is our purpose?
I see. Well, that's interesting. I think with when the Buddha asked the question, what's our essential nature, he wasn't looking for an idea or even a purpose. He was looking for a direct experience, something that wasn't dependent on memory, something that was really immediate and direct. And, you know, in his practice, he studied, trying to find what was essential. And mostly everything that he examined, if we really examine, and all you can really examine is the experiences that you have in your senses, through your senses. And what he realized, in examining the experiences that he was having through his senses, through the eyes, through the ears, through the nose, the tongue, and the body, and through what's called the sixth door of perception, the mind, he saw what was essential to what he experienced through the senses were basically three things. He saw what was essential about anything is that it was always in flux. So anything knowable through the senses was changing. And anything that was changing, which is everything that can be known, everything that was changing was not essential, because it would come and it would go. So it couldn't be said to be the essential nature. And anything that came and went couldn't be so easily personalized. It couldn't be me. It can't be mine. Because it's selfless. It comes and goes. So that, where's the self in things that come and go? Is there any self in the changing sounds and the sensations and the moods and the thoughts? Anything? Is there any self in any of that? Can that be owned by anyone? So if it's selfless, and if it can't be held on to, and if it's changing, that can't be our essential. That can't be our essential nature. It's our conditioned nature. It's a matter of conditions. When conditions come together in a certain way, you have a sound, and then it fades. Those conditions change. A sight, something is seen, and those conditions change. We started the sitting tonight. Notice that implicit in sitting down right now is that you, in coming into real time, you see that time, that anything that was is gone, and anything that will be is unborn. We enter into a stream of change the moment we stop. So anything that arises and fades is not essential. It's a common characteristic of everything, but it's not our essential nature. So as you probably know, what was interesting for the Buddha, and what each of us can come to know for ourselves through direct experience, is the effect of seeing really clearly. Seeing really clearly that whatever arises passes away. How that affects our understanding and our consciousness. essentially the difference between a Buddha, somebody who's awake, and an ordinary person is a Buddha knows through and through that whatever arises fades away. And that's really all the Buddhas know, in a way. And why is it significant to know that? When we know that to be true and we enter into a non-contentious, non-reactive, open-hearted, to get back to your forgiveness thing, open-hearted relationship with changing conditions, something in us relaxes. Everything known through the senses still coming and going. But there is some shift in relationship to our experience. And as our relationship shifts, we're no longer caught up in trying to falling into what are called the three common misperceptions. The three common misperceptions is called ignorance or avidya. Avidya is taking that which is changing to be permanent, taking that which is unreliable or unsatisfactory to be reliable, and taking that which is selfless to be me and mine, to making it self. Those are the three misperceptions that keep us bound in thinking what's essential is to have and have more, and keep having more. And meanwhile, because conditions change, it leaves in its wake a lot of misery. We're continually on a wheel of seeking because we're trying to find that essential peace and forgiveness through acquisition. Acquisition of experience, acquisition of things, of places. And that, unfortunately, doesn't reveal to us our essential nature. So if we, on the other hand, come into harmony with things the way they are, that whatever arises passes away, whatever arises and passes away cannot be clung to, can't be held on to, or can't give us any lasting satisfaction, and whatever arises and passes cannot be me, cannot be mine, cannot be self. If we come into harmony with that understanding, something in our nature opens up. We touch into something in the quality of our knowing, of our understanding, an understanding reveals itself, a direct understanding, a direct experience of something in our nature that is unconditioned, deathless. The nature of our mind, the essential nature of our mind shines through clear, clarity of perception, empty, not made of anything, shining, experiencing all experience, but not touched by it, not bound by it. The essential nature of our mind, liberation, emptiness, not the idea of it, but the direct experience of what you are after your last thought has ceased and before the next one arises. If we've relinquished the hold and the obsession with grabbing onto what's changing, pushing away what we don't like, we start to taste the sense of presence. And when we do begin to feel that sense of presence, after we notice there's little gaps after the last thought has stopped before the next one comes, is there not in that moment, in this moment, when we're no longer grabbing or pushing away, is there not a vivid clarity? Is there not, you could say, this is awareness, or this is the Buddha awake. But that which, that essential nature, it doesn't have a height, it doesn't have a depth, it doesn't have a color, it doesn't have a shape, it doesn't have an inside, it doesn't have an outside. It is without foundation, without support. And your own nature, your own essential nature, is the end of suffering. It's beyond stress. Someone came in today to meet with me, and they, you know, and whatever describing the nature of mind, try not to get caught up in the idea, but try to just sense here and now, what is my essential nature before I can think? What can you say about yourself in real time other than I'm awake? But anyway, someone came in to describe how stressed out they were. And over the course of our conversation, I said, of course, you know, you have all these, going through a divorce, you're having to make all of these decisions, and you're, you know, this is a transition period, and this is all, you know, this is all, these are things that are hard to bear. I said, but on the other hand, when you say, I'm stressed, you're really describing your situation. And it's really easy when you think about your whole situation to think that's really what your essential experience is. And I said, well, what about right here with me? Isn't this also your experience? It's just the two of us sitting together. And so you're sitting with me. I said, and we sat for a few moments and we kind of settled in, just kind of opened our senses and what's happening at the different doors of perception. Okay, there's some sensation, there's some breath, there's some sounds. We're getting a little more essential here. It's really, in the relative sense, what's essential is six experiences. There's seeing, there's hearing, there's smelling, there's tasting, there's touching, there's thinking, feeling, and the knowing of that. But the more we just came into real time, just the awareness of what's actually happening, on present evidence, it was hard to find the stress. The stress was of the past. I said, it's not to deny all of these difficult challenges that you're navigating and that all of us are navigating. But you have the opportunity right now, and you have the opportunity now, if you have a sense of urgency, and you have the privilege and the comfort to be able to do this, to cut through that whole view of reality that describes you what's essential, describes your situation as essential, when what's essential is indescribable. And you are that right now, right in the middle of whatever period that you're having. Freedom waits, but most are preoccupied with something else. We're mostly preoccupied with the story of ourselves. That's what we talked about last week. The story of ourselves and our life situation, our path, that's not, it's not essential. course, our being able to talk about it depends on everything that's happened to us, our being here together. But at the heart of our being, right now, here and now, there is freedom. There is pure wakefulness that has never altered even a hair in your entire existence. And that's what the Buddha discovered sitting under the Bodhi tree. But it took him, it took a sense of, took the stress that he began with and a really strong desire, strong sense of urgency to find what is essential. And he saw that it wasn't the changing flow and the aging of his body, it wasn't the ever-changing moods, it wasn't the thoughts and images, it wasn't the situation. It was what awakened. It was the light of awakening that revealed itself when his mind stopped grabbing and stopped pushing away. Space was there. May we all find freedom. May we all discover our essential nature and appreciate our privilege and not waste any time. Okay? Thanks for your practice, and may our practice be for the benefit of all beings, not just for ourselves. May we all lower the heat. May we all create a safe world where people don't have to be so angry. May everyone have enough. May we all be liberated. Anyway, thank you for your presence here, and thank you for your generosity, and hope to see you next Tuesday.
Thank you. Yeah, really.
Bon voyage.
It really speaks to it. Yes, thank you.